I am Planta on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Anna Olson joins me now. The popular Food Network star has a new book out, Fresh with Anna Olson. It's the name of her popular program as well, and in it she has inspired recipes for all seasons. She features a lot of local ingredients, which is important, and the dishes featured in the book are good to look at, and at a glance easy to make. Her previous books include In the Kitchen with Anna, Sugar, and Another Cup of Sugar, all bestsellers. Her website is annaolson.com. This book is published by Whitecap. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Anna Olson. Good morning, Ms. Olson.
Thank you very much, Joe. How are you?
Very well, yourself.
Oh, very good. Happy to be in Vancouver.
Is there a place in Vancouver that you like going to eat?
Well, you know what? It's interesting. When I'm here, I'm typically cooking myself, and quite often my evenings are at cooking schools and bookstores and such. But I happen to be staying around the corner from a place that my husband recommended I visit, and I think I may have an opportunity this evening to go to Goo, G-U-U, and I hear it's a lot of fun.
It is. Yeah, I've been there a couple of times, and it's just it's loud, but other than that, it's actually part of the ambience, the loudness of it, I think.
Well, and I think that'll be part of the fun. I find the quality of the sushi and the Japanese food here just exceptional, so I try and get as much as I possibly can because we don't have nearly the quality in Ontario.
You know, it's an odd thing about Goo, talking about Goo for just a sec, they don't serve sushi.
Oh, they don't serve sushi. Okay.
Yeah, it's interesting about that, but I don't know. Maybe they do now. But everything in this book, you've made everything in this book, have you?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
I designed all the recipes.
Is that fun to do, to come up with recipes and the sort?
Oh, my goodness. It's immensely fun and creative because it's a constantly changing process. What starts as an initial concept as a recipe can sometimes, by the time you get to the end product, look completely different than what you started with. I like to do a lot of my, I do all of my recipe testing in my own home kitchen. Even though I'm a trained chef, if you're working in a restaurant environment, you have things in different proportion and scale. Every ingredient is right at your fingertips. You have multiple bowls and pots and pans and tools, and most importantly, you have someone there to do your dishes. And it's amazing how cooking at home with your own sort of home-scale utensils and when you have to wash your own dishes, it really forces you to look at how to make your methods more efficient because we're all a little time-crunched. And so when your job's to cook all day long, you've got all day long to cook. But sometimes when you're home for dinner and you've only got half an hour before you need to deliver dinner on the table, that comes into play. Or perhaps you're spending a Saturday afternoon just enjoying the process of cooking when you're having guests coming over for dinner that evening. It's a different process, and so I love keeping that in mind as I cook away. I usually put on music and just play.
Now, eating locally, that seems to be a feature of the book.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be an important thing nowadays, isn't it?
It is, and it's not... I think it's a misnomer to call it a trend because until the days of industrialization and mass transportation, we used to cook what was seasonal and local. And a big part of getting through the wintertime was putting up preserves that were from peak harvest when you had the bounty and then enjoying cooking that way. And if you look at the way some of our traditions of cooking come, you can connect back with that local and seasonal approach, but I think we're starting to pay more attention to where our food comes from, in prepared foods, what's in it, and I think that's where the interest in going to the source for ingredients has become so important now.
On the cover of the book, you're carrying a case of, I guess these are heirloom tomatoes, are they?
Actually, they're hothouse tomatoes.
Hothouse, so those the difference between hothouse and heirloom are what?
Oh, well, the variety is what determines an heirloom tomato. It has to be a pure tomato tracked through a number of generations, and it traditionally is handed down from family member. You can buy them online now through co-ops, and quite often part of the deal is if you buy tomato seeds that are heirloom tomatoes, you have to agree to send back that amount of seeds plus an additional percent to keep the strain alive. But these hothouse tomatoes, I shot the cover in April in the beautiful Niagara region, but like most of Canada in April, there's not a whole lot of produce to choose from in terms of the colorful bounty, but our local hothouse business is just blossoming at that time of year, and a good friend of mine grows these tomatoes and cucumbers in his hothouse, all organic and naturally fed, and so it's a great Canadian resource we sometimes take for granted, you know, and it's purely organic. So it's a hothouse tomato that's a local product, and it tastes just like it came out of a field because, again, it only travels the, I think it's 3 kilometers from my house.
Yeah. Now, there's a recipe in the book for fiddleheads. I keep hearing that, and I don't even know what that is. Mm-hmm. What are fiddleheads?
A fiddlehead is a distinctively springtime ingredient that you find fresh, and they do grow across the country, and what it is actually the little sprout of a fern plant. So it grows in the woods under the shade of trees in sort of boggy, swampy water, so it's really sort of wet, and before the actual fern shoots uncurl and turn into fern plants, that's when they're picked, and then they've got that mild, you know how so many green vegetables in springtime are sort of mild and fresh, like you think of snap peas, snow peas,
Yeah. Spinach,
asparagus? It has that. It's part of that sort of same family of flavors, and so you give them a good wash, because they came out of murky forest floors, give it a good wash, and then you blanch them in boiling salted hot water, and then you can treat them, you can serve them at room temperature with a vinaigrette like I do, or just saute them with a little garlic and butter, and you're all set. And it's a real Canadian ingredient.
Yeah. What's your favorite dish for the fall?
Anything with root vegetables right now. So I'm just right into carrots and parsnips and celery root, and the mineral content to these vegetables is fantastic, so they're so good for you. They're affordable. But I give them a little twist, and I'll use something like a warm vinaigrette on the root vegetables because it actually they're so sweet and rich-tasting, it can almost be too heavy just on their own. So by putting actually a vinaigrette made with apple cider vinegar and a little rosemary in there kind of lightens the taste. So all of a sudden, something like a roasted chicken dinner on a Sunday night isn't a heavy, stodgy thing. It's sort of light and refreshing.
What's the secret of roasting potatoes? I know there's a recipe in the book for roasting potatoes. You hear different, you know, sort of foolproof plans to do that.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do?
When I roast mini potatoes, I like to cut them in half, and then I put them on a baking tray with olive oil, and I put them face down first. That way they get a sort of skin or outside surface start on the flat side of the potato at first. And then as they cook, I give them a little toss and turn, and then I find they brown nice and evenly, so you get that sort of crispy exterior, but the soft, buttery, creamy interior, almost like a French fry without the fry.
Yeah, and it's the little potatoes that are big this season?
Yeah, mini potatoes are in their season right now. Any sort of new potato is good for roasting. That sort of waxy texture really makes good roasted potatoes.
There's a recipe in the book for osobuco.
Mm-hmm.
What do you serve it with? I couldn't tell there.
It's a saffron, a chini di pepe, which in English translates from Italian to mean pepper seed. And the classic osobuco dish, osobuco milanese from Milan, is the veal shanks braised in the tomato sauce. And the traditional side dish is a saffron risotto. But have you made risotto before?
No. I'm not a big fan of risotto. Well, I shouldn't say that. I like risotto, but I've never made it, no.
Yeah, and it takes a little time because unlike boiling rice, you have to stir it slowly over a pot just to make sure the starch is releasing at the right point. So what I do is I use a soup pasta, which is this acini di pepe or pepper seed. It could be easily orzo or something else. And I use the same method as making risotto. So
right. First
I sauté it in oil, and then you gradually add your liquid. But because it's pasta, it doesn't need babysitting quite as much as risotto. So you can walk away from it, come back again, and continue cooking it till you get to that perfect point of tenderness. And it really adds nice texture and complements the osobuco.
And what's the flavor?
Of the saffron.
Yeah. That's just saffron?
Yeah. Saffron is the stamen from a crocus. And it's got its own character. I don't know how you can compare it to anything. It lends a beautiful, bright yellow color. But you only need a pinch because a little goes a long way, and if you use too much saffron, it ends up having almost a metallic taste.
Yeah.
Yeah, but if you soak the saffron threads in water first, it starts drawing out their color, and you get that transfer and the appropriate balance of flavor without adding too much.
A prime rib, I'm a big fan of that. And you have a recipe in that. You put something on top of it, do you?
I do. Oh, prime rib roast. And we do that Christmas dinner almost every year. And I do a horseradish mustard crust. And when you puree horseradish and rosemary and a lot of Dijon mustard together and you slather it on the outside of the roast, as it slow cooks in the oven, it creates a crust. And so I love horseradish with my roast beef, but the crust it gets is absolutely divine, and you can smell it as it's roasting. Oh, it just fills the house with that beautiful fragrance.
And you put that topping right when you put the thing in the oven?
Mm-hmm. When the beef comes out of the fridge, you slather on the crust before it goes into the oven.
And kids like the taste of it?
I have not found, I have a stepdaughter, Mika, and she will never turn down a second slice of that prime rib roast.
Really?
Huh.
Yeah. And is that the secret then, to put the topping on, then once that's sort of crisped up, you know that it's done?
No, I do recommend with a prime rib roast using an oven thermometer. If you're going to invest financially in a rib roast, and a full rib roast can run you from $70 to $120, so you're looking at feeding a crowd.
Yeah.
And if you're feeding a crowd, that usually means you're going to be pretty busy. So not only are you going to be the head cook, you're going to be the co-check person, the greeter at the door, the bartender, the babysitter, the psychologist. You got a lot to do, and I've seen it happen too many times. You get caught up in your tasks, and all of a sudden you realize the roast has been in the oven that extra half an hour, and it's cooked far too much for your crowd. And then you're stuck. You put in all that effort and energy, and it's not what you wanted it to be. So to buy a really good oven thermometer, and either the instant read that whenever you happen to check the oven, you insert it into the meat and you look at it, or a roasting thermometer that you leave in the roast, lets you keep your eye on it so that you know your timing. And what I like to do is I have one that's digital, and I set the alarm to go off about 10 to 15 degrees before I want it to reach my desired temperature. I usually take it to about 130 myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's my little sound cue to start the potatoes and the vegetables and get everything else ready.
Something I've seen on menus a lot, and there's a recipe in the book for flank steak.
Mm-hmm.
Has that become, because I've seen that in on menus a lot, has that become sort of a choice cut of meat now, I suppose?
Well, a choice cut sort of implies that it's tender, like a tenderloin or a ribeye steak or a New York steak. It is a tough cut. It's a lean cut, but I think people like it because typical two lean cuts, like a sirloin, is a flank steak has great flavor. But it takes care in preparing it so that you get that maximize on the flavor, but also get a tender result. So that means marinating it to help tenderize it and add a bit of flavor, and cooking it not past really medium rare, but medium at the most, will ensure that the texture's nice. And then the key is to actually slice it on the bias. So you really go against the grain, and then by slicing it thinly, you get tender, easy-to-eat slices, and it is delicious.
Now, your husband, he's a chef, right?
Yes, he certainly is. He teaches at Niagara College, in their culinary school there.
And so your work, your day job, I guess, is a TV show, is it?
Yes, I do a number of things, everything from the cookbook development and I work on so many different projects, but a big part of that is also taping episodes of Fresh with Anna Olsen, and I just finished production a couple weeks ago.
Now, how long does it take to film like a half an hour show? Because we watch you regularly, and we see it, and it seems like it takes a half an hour, but I'm sure it doesn't.
No, it does take, it takes a full 12-hour day to do one episode's worth of recipes. So I do each recipe a couple of times. That way we can get the best camera angles possible. I can show you exactly every step of the way in making the recipe. And the nice thing, even though I do the recipes a couple of times, the food never goes to waste. So anything that doesn't get used, that of course is not food safety compromised, or doesn't actually get consumed as part of the episode, gets donated to our local shelter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. The I read somewhere that you're carrying the Olympic torch.
Yes. Oh, I'm honored to be carrying the torch. It's December 21st in Welland.
And so do you have to train for that, or what's the deal?
Well, I'm relieved that I don't have to do a rigorous training. I'll be running 300 meters.
Yeah.
My concern is not tripping.
Right.
And letting the flame go out.
Yeah.
So it really is that true unifying of Canada, because my torch is lit by someone, and then I pass it on and light the next person's torch, and it'll be quite the event. So, but for training, you know, a couple of rounds of Wii Fit should do me just fine.
Yeah. What are the ingredients that we should always keep stocked in our kitchen or pantry?
Well, in the baking world, you always want good quality unsalted butter. You want a different selection of sugars and good quality vanilla extract, and then whatever fruits are in season. So right now, it's apples, pears, pie pumpkins, cranberries are at their best. And then when it comes to the produce, pay attention when you walk around your grocery store or hit a farmer's market and check out what is labeled from as close to you as possible, and that will tell you what you should have in your refrigerator, because the simple rule is what grows together goes together. So look for those root vegetables, things like bitter greens, endive, radicchio, Swiss chard, and kale, and cabbages, potatoes, and onions.
And throughout the country, because I know you travel throughout the country,
mm-hmm.
Do you find that we have the variety of vegetables throughout the year?
Mm-hmm. We're pretty good. You know, we talked about the hothouse industry. That really gives us our bridge seasons. That tomato and cucumber hothouse grower I was speaking about in April, he's actually has tomatoes. He just started ripening. He doesn't compete with the field farmers in the summer, but he's going to have tomatoes all the way through December. And then he has them again in April. So we really only go through about 2.5-3 months without that sort of fresh produce we know, but all of our other produce stores well. But remember that shopping locally isn't just about the produce. It's about knowing where your chicken, your beef, your pork, your dairy, your eggs, your cheese comes from, and supporting the local artisan food producers, someone who makes salamis or prosciuttos, someone that makes cheese. I even have a friend who is in the ice cream business, and he follows his family recipe and uses local milk and cream and fruits to flavor his ice creams.
Now, you mentioned at the top that when you're on book tour like this, that you spend a lot of time cooking. You meet fans of the show, I guess. I'm curious, what do they want to talk to you about?
Well, you know what? A lot of people, they like to hear the inside scoop of how a cooking show happens. But I still get lots of questions, and I'm thrilled about it, about baking, because I'm a chef and pastry chef, and I came to be known for a lot of people through my dessert show, Sugar, that aired for a number of years, and especially this time of year, as people are approaching the sort of holiday baking season, I do get asked a lot about baking and how to best get through the holidays.
Do they share recipes with you?
Oh, yes, and I appreciate getting people's feedback. Actually, I had a cooking class last night, and a woman ran home to get a recipe that she had been making, fortunately not one of mine, but that she had been having trouble with, and she brought it in, and we looked at it together, and it looks like an interesting recipe, and I think I guided her through how to make it better for her, because she was running into some sticky issues.
Do you watch other cooking shows?
I do, when I get a chance to. Yeah, there's a lot out there to choose from. And I'm a fan of the instructional cooking shows that really sort of share with you knowledge and bits of information, because there's always something to learn.
Anna, it's been a pleasure to talk to you and to read this book. Continued good luck with it.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I've appreciated you having me here.
You're very welcome. The website for more is annaolson.com. The book is called Fresh with Anna Olson. It's published by Whitecap. Its author, Anna Olson, on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plato.